Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley behind the glass. You guys with us, 215-592-9494. We'll hit on the Phillies' move today as they sign a relief pitcher that might end up their closer. I saw a quote from Dave Dombrowski about the Phillies' acquisition, and they actually did sign someone. We're about 3 hours away from the MLB lockout approaching, so the Phillies are about to put a cap on their spending here of $10 million, all $10 million, before this sport gets shut down for a couple months. We'll hit on that, who they got, and if this guy actually is going to be this team's closer this year or maybe one of their closers. So that's coming up in a little bit. Right now, we're going to go out to the guest line and talk to Ryan Pagnatti, who's joined us a couple times so far this season, talk about the Eagles, coaching decisions around the NFL, kind of where the league is right now, former analytics coach on Doug Peterson's staff, and now a consultant for college and the NFL. Ryan, how you doing tonight?
Great. How's it going?
Ryan, we're doing well. We're kind of unpacking a uncharacteristically poor performance in terms of turnovers by Jalen Hurts and a tough game for the Eagles on Sunday. Ryan, we haven't talked in a little bit here, and obviously the team has changed since we did, and they've become a run-based team. What do you make of the Eagles' offense, the way they're running it right now? I know, you know, in theory, you know, passing is the way the league is now, but they're having a lot of success running the football. Are you surprised they're doing it this way, and do you think it can continue?
I do think it's a little bit surprising, but, you know, honestly, their effectiveness running the ball has really been incredible. And, you know, I think they've done a really good job of developing a run offense that utilizes Jalen's strengths. And Jalen has been, you know, really outstanding when it comes to reading these plays and making correct decisions. The offensive line is developing. You know, some of these younger guys are continuing to play, and, you know, they're getting better and better. And, I mean, as of right now, I mean, I don't know if in recent years if I've seen a run team as effective as they've been in the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks.
So, Ryan, there's a big question I think a lot of fans have on whether or not the Eagles want to be this team, right? They've transformed into this, but it's a matter of you know, doing it for now versus doing it because they want to do it. When you were with the Eagles and you know, game planning and thought process on philosophy, do you think this is something that they care about, or are they just trying to be efficient and it doesn't really matter what efficiency is as long as efficiency is achieved?
You know, I do think to a degree, just from my experience there was always such a big emphasis on being an effective passing offense and, you know, how the organization invested resources. You know, it was, you know, if you were a receiver, you obviously had to be, you know, an explosive player. If you were a tight end, you had to be a receiver, maybe less than a blocker. I mean, there was always a clear emphasis on, you know, the pass game, and that's organizationally how they wanted to operate. So to me, I do think it is a little bit surprising, but I think part of the reality is, you know, like, this is, you know, where Jalen's at his best. You know, this is maybe the offensive line is a little bit more better suited for run blocking. You know, they clearly have found a formula, and I just think it would be sort of silly to get away from, you know, what ultimately is just working. But I think in the long-term vision, I do think it's something that, you know, the organization is probably going to talk about, like, can we consistently win games if we're throwing for 150 yards? Is that the type of identity that we want and we think we can, you know, succeed with? I think that's a more of an off-season type, you know, question that they can't really worry about right now, as they're just trying to win games.
Yeah, and Ryan, they are trying to win games. They have a game against the Jets this weekend. What are you generally down on them after the loss on Sunday, or do you think that was more of a blip and they'll be able to continue to stay in this race with this formula they have, you know, the next few weeks here?
Well, I know the Jets are really struggling, you know, as an organization, and defensively, you know, they've had some really tough games. And if I'm the Eagles, I'm looking at that as a chance to kind of get back on track on offense. I would say, from, you know, an analytics perspective, the low scoring output last game was a little bit fluky because the offense did manage to move the ball into plus territory, you know, many times and then result in, you know, no points or a turnover. So I think, you know, over the long term, if you're consistently moving the ball down there, you're going to see points show up on the scoreboard more so than it did in the Giants game. And I think for their sake, you know, I think they should be really excited that the defense, you know, has seemed to turn a corner and is playing a lot better than earlier on in the year. And I think they have a chance here with, you know, the schedule, the way it's sort of lined up and the division opponents. You know, they do have a very solid chance of, you know, sticking around this playoff hunt and, you know, playing right down to that last game to be in the mix.
Ryan, I'm trying to remember the timeline. I believe you still were part of the organization with the Eagles here when Jordan Mailata was drafted and first came in here and started developing. It's pretty remarkable to me watching this guy because, I mean, he went from being a project to now he is obviously a starter, paid very well to stick around on an extension. And I just rewatching that game on Sunday, I mean, he was just mauling people. I mean, it just looks like this guy is just from a different universe than most offensive linemen.
Yeah, I know. Just from my experience, I knew during that draft that, you know, Jeff Stoutland, he always has like a guy or two that he really, really likes in the draft. And that was, you know, his guy that year, you know, that he was always talking about. You know, he's like, you know, if we ever got a chance, you know, develop this guy, the physical traits are just so incredible. And I think he would always sort of get excited for the opportunity to work with someone that really, you know, has elite physical traits, but I mean, he didn't even know how to put his shoulder pads on. It was just such like an enormous, you know, step. And we obviously had some veteran players at tackle that, you know, those guys were good to help mentor him. You know, obviously we have an outstanding offensive line coach and they're doing a great job with the scheme. But, you know, I think the whole organization deserves credit for, you know, his development because, you know, very early on in his career, just from being in the building, it did not seem like it was going to be possible. Like it was such a large learning curve. But, you know, you turn on the tape now and he's, looks like he might be an all-pro pretty soon.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Talking about Ryan Pagnetti, former Eagles coach, game manager, analytics under Doug Peterson. Ryan, big picture NFL stuff. I mean, what's becoming the story of the season is just how good, how quickly Mac Jones is and the Patriots are. I saw your tweet the other day that there was a redraft. He would go number one. Why do you think so many teams miss? Why do you think there were four other quarterbacks taking over Mac Jones, who has been not only just the best quarterback of the rookie class, I mean, it's not even close. He's by far the best rookie quarterback.
You know, I think to some degree, people have sort of overestimated the idea of, like, this player just has great teammates. That's the reason he's successful. I think with Mac Jones' case, you know, it's like, okay, he has all these first-round receivers. He has a first-round offensive line. But, you know, I mean, I think you go back to players like Justin Jefferson, you're like, oh, well, he's not even the best receiver on his team, or, you know, he's got a superstar quarterback throwing him the ball. I think to some degree, evaluators are overestimating the surroundings of the player and not really, you know, focusing in on, wow, Mac Jones' accuracy is incredible. I believe it. His statistical line for this, his like completion rate last year was, you know, maybe the best in college football history. You know, that doesn't happen by accident. That's not just because you're around good players. I mean, you're doing that in the SEC, which is the hardest conference to play in. And I think, you know, it really is challenging sort of sorting out, you know, how much of it is the player, how much of it is the surroundings, how much of it is the scheme, the coaching. But I think, you know, the rest of the NFL has to be looking around and think, like, did we really just let Belichick get a franchise quarterback at the 15th overall pick and he didn't even have to trade up? It's really incredible.
Ryan, how much do you think the NFL, and you would think at this point maybe that would be, it would be not happening anymore, but I still think it is when I watch Mac Jones. Do you think that tools and physical traits are still overvalued at the quarterback position? Because, I mean, look, you know, Trevor Lawrence is like the prospect, right? And Zach Wilson's arm, and you could talk about Trey Lance's athleticism and size and Justin Fields doing what he did with a dual threat kind of ability. And then there's Mac Jones, you know, taking after all those guys. Do you think that teams still overrate physical tools with the quarterback position?
Yeah, I think to some degree, ultimately for a quarterback to consistently be successful in the NFL, you have to be a good decision maker and you have to be an accurate thrower of the football. And I think people get so caught up with the athleticism or, you know, start thinking about where this player could be and really not thinking about, like, okay, at this age, at 21, 22, 23 years old, why are they not anywhere near that player that you project them to be? And, you know, people were saying that, okay, Mac Jones has already reached his ceiling. Well, his ceiling looks like he could be a Pro Bowl quarterback, so that's not bad. You know, I think it really is it's an interesting discussion because at the same time, you know, a lot of these successful quarterbacks in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years out of the draft do have some mobility. So Mac was a little bit of a different case there, but obviously New England has a ton of experience designing an offense with a pocket passer, and clearly they're doing it again. So I think it's an interesting discussion, but, you know, I think there's several teams that, you know, either picked a quarterback prior to Mac Jones or, you know, chose another position who are going to be looking back and thinking, like, wow, that was a great opportunity to get really a franchise-changing player.
Ryan, you tweeted something earlier today, a chart that basically, you know, looked at catchable passes and guys that have had the most drops versus guys that have had least amount of drops over a 5-year span. I thought it was really interesting. You kind of compared Nick Foles to Carson Wentz and that two quarterbacks they were here when you were. And to spin it back to Jalen Hurts, I the more I watch him, I feel like, and maybe this will make sense to you, I say it all the time, I don't know if listeners understand what I'm saying. Like, I think when he's accurate, he's very accurate. Like, he throws the ball, just seems like it's easy to catch. It's where it's supposed to be when he's accurate. Unfortunately, he's not accurate enough. That's part of the issue right now with Jalen Hurts. When you look at quarterbacks, is there a way to quantify that? Like, guys can have higher completion percentages, but they're not hitting guys in stride. They're not really catchable passes, just like tough catches are being made, or they're not throwing the ball on the ground. I feel like Jalen is really accurate when he is. Does that make sense to you? And is there a way to quantify that with certain quarterbacks and versus other guys?
Yeah, no, I think that you're on the money with that. Really, you know, that was something I personally learned from John DeFilippo, who was an outstanding quarterback coach. But just hearing him talk about, you know, how completion rate really did not matter in the grand scheme of things, and it really was about ball placement and strike point accuracy. Like, where that ball was located was often going to be critical to whether or not the play succeeded. And I think, you know, there definitely can be a large difference. You might have a guy at 70% and another guy at 68%, but the guy at 68%, you know, he's consistently putting the ball in a place like a Tom Brady where a receiver can catch the ball and make a play after. And I do think it's a little bit interesting how Jalen seems to be a little bit inconsistent with the accuracy. You know, I think you're going to just have to deal with that. That is sort of his play style, and that might be just who he is. He clearly is working hard on his accuracy. Made improvements over the course of his career from college to now, and he's such a hardworking guy that I think he'll continue to improve. But I think to some degree, too, you know, I think there's something to his maybe having some trouble with his height and the height of the offensive line and, you know, staying in the pocket. And I think he's such a natural, you know, scrambler, and he likes throwing on the move. And when teams do a good job with the Giants, instead of trying to really keep him in the pocket, I think you might see the accuracy not really be where you would want in a perfect situation.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're going to keep watching, and we'll see if he develops here into something great for the Eagles. Ryan, always appreciate you hopping on. Appreciate you making some time, and enjoy the games this weekend.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Ryan Pagnatti, former Eagles analytics coach and under Doug Peterson. I saw that chart today tweeted out. It's pretty remarkable. Like, it was, I think the actual breakdown was catch rate or drop percentage. Like, quarterbacks that have had the most passes dropped on them over, I think it was like a 5-year span. And you look at the list, and it's not like they're the worst quarterbacks at the top. Like, there's good quarterbacks that have had more passes dropped on them. And then there's other quarterbacks like, why is that guy there? They've had less passes dropped on them. I don't know how we quantify this. I just feel like Nick Foles always threw a catchable ball. I say it every week. When Jalen is accurate, it's right there. Like, it's where it's supposed to be. He often is not doing that, right? It's not happening enough. Meanwhile, Carson Wentz, I always felt he didn't throw the most accurate passes, even though his completion percentages are higher or were higher. Like, he completed a higher percentage of passes, but they were tougher to, like, catch and run with. It's just, it's almost like the numbers lie to you sometimes when you look at these quarterbacks. It's weird. But I saw that chart today, and I was like, oh, this makes sense. This is what I've been trying to say for years. The top of the list was, I'm trying to look at how the list is set up here. So the drop rate, I mean, guys like Blake Bortles, Carson Wentz, Josh Allen, Colin Kaepernick, pretty high drop rate. And then, like, no one drops passes from Nick Foles or Mac Jones. It's weird.
Because that first group, you'd argue, has some of the most elite arm talent that you would have seen in the last decade.
Jared Goff towards the bottom, right? Not a great arm talent. But
yeah, I mean, there's something about these, I hate to call them ducks because they're still decent throws, but like Nick Foles' pass kind of fluttered. Right?
Soft.
Like Carson Wentz drove passes through receivers. Nick Foles kind of, his passes tend to have parachutes that would kind of land in your lap.
Drops it in for you.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'd argue the most beautiful pass that Nick Foles had, and maybe the most beautiful pass that this offense has seen in the last 20-plus years, it's like a 15-yard out route thrown by Nick Foles. Like, it looked like it was in slow motion, but it worked every time.
Yeah, I mean, I look at some of the names at the top. You're right, Bortles, kind of one of those hard throwers. Wentz. Who else we have here?
Is that Allen?
Josh Allen is near the top of this list. Colin Kaepernick, who never had any touch, right? He was just a fastball thrower. That's what Kaepernick did as a quarterback. It's just interesting to look at this list because that's the whole thing is you want to catch and run, right? You want to be able to make a play after you make the catch. So it's definitely something we'll keep our eye on. I mean, look, Jalen Hurts has to get better. There's no question as a passer, but I do think he has that. He has that like, oh, that's an easy pass to catch when it's there. But somehow that didn't help Jalen Reagor on Sunday. Somehow Jalen Reagor still couldn't make those two catches. The more I've watched the replays over the week, I still can't believe the second one wasn't caught. The first one I kind of compartmentalized, like, all right, the guy's on his back. He's running full speed. I can almost excuse it to where he's not very good. Why should I expect him to make that catch? The second one still boggles my mind.
Yeah, me too. Because even when you watch it all the way through, if you watch the All-22 film, whatever you watch, he wasn't open to begin. Like, just the fact that he was open and the ball was in his hands feels like such a weird play. And then he just dropped it. Like, I almost think he was so shocked that he got so wide open. He had this opportunity at the goal line. He overthought it. Like, Ruben Frank was on with Jody Mack last night, and he mentioned that a lot of the plays where Reagor makes a good play, it happens in a split second, right, where he doesn't have to think. He makes a good catch on a slant or a screen, or he beats a cornerback right off the line of scrimmage, and they kind of float a ball over his shoulder 15 yards downfield, and he makes the catch without having to think. That was a play where the ball kind of felt like it was floating up there forever, right? And and he had the time to stand there, to box out the safety, to go up, to try and high point the ball and make a catch. And in all of that, I think he overthought it.
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, look, this kid, I think, has been in his head since he arrived to Philadelphia. I mean, that's just, I mean, we're talking about a player that has been, you know, pretty outspoken that, you know, social media has been a problem for him. He's deleted things. He's fought back with fans. His dad's chirping back with reporters here in Philadelphia, fighting about his playing time or his usage. I mean, this is someone, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he's mature enough to handle a city like this and pressure like this. I mean, does that factor in fourth down and 10? With, you know, 20 seconds to go against the Giants? I think so. I mean, it's just he's in his head. And the ironic part is we watched this. We watched something similar with Nelson Agholor, you know, 5-6 years ago where he was in his own head to the point where they had to sit him down for a game. But nothing Sirianni said this week makes me believe they're not going to play Jalen Reagor on Sunday. He's going to play. I mean, Sirianni said on Monday he gives them their best chance, which probably is an indictment on the rest of this receiving core more than anything positive about Jalen Reagor. Like, I mean, look at the numbers. I think I heard Jody last night. I was driving home talk about where he ranks yards per route run and all that. Like, it's all at the bottom. It's bad.
Yeah, I mean, he's statistically been one of the least productive wide receivers in football. But you mentioned, like, are we going to start throwing J.J. Arcega-Whiteside out there again?
Well, he is Jose now.
Are we going to start throwing Jose Arcega-Whiteside out there again? Greg Ward, even though some people still kind of like him, like, what's he going to do, average 5 yards a catch playing in the slot, where Quez Watkins really is your slot receiver at this point? It's Reagor and Smith on the outside. I mean, the guys you have on this roster behind him, we know what they are. And I don't know if they are any better than what he's giving you unless you decide to go to the practice squad and get John Hightower, who, fun fact, was the worst receiver in football last year by passer rating when targeted.
Remember the drop he had against the Ravens where Carson hit him in the hands early in the game?
Yes.
Boom. And that game went to hell, too. So, like, I think there'd be a case for Greg Ward getting more snaps if Greg Ward didn't drop the two passes he's had a chance to make this year. Hasn't he had two? I mean, the one against the Chiefs, I believe it was against the Chiefs. Hurts, I think, led him a little too much. It wasn't a great pass, but certainly I think it hit his hands. It was just, wasn't the same play as Sunday, the sprint right option? It was the same thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, that one wasn't a great Hurts pass, but it certainly could have been caught by Greg Ward. This Sunday, the one before halftime, that was just a horrendous drop. Like, I feel like Hurts put the ball exactly where he's supposed to put the ball. Catch it.
Also, why is Greg Ward getting goal line targets when he hasn't been targeted in like 2 months? Like, I get it. It's his job to catch the ball, and he still had to die for it, but it's just weird to me that, like, Greg Ward is someone that we haven't trusted to have a role in the offense in 6 or 7 games. Then all of a sudden, in a goal line situation, in a game where you're only down 6, you have a chance to take the lead before the half. You know what we should do? We should start targeting Greg Ward again. Why? Like if you are confident in Devontae Smith's ability to run routes, if you're paying Dallas Goedert all of this money, if you're using Kenny Gainwell as a receiver in the slot and out of the backfield sometimes, why is Greg Ward on the field?
Well, I think
it's just a weird thing to me.
Yeah, I think a real case can be made that Sirianni got a little too cute on Sunday. I mean, what was it? Well, we had a caller mention earlier. Was it 8 of the first 13 players that extent were pass plays? So that there was that aspect of it. A team that has come in running the football at a historic rate. They came out throwing more than running on Sunday. There was that. The Greg Ward play before halftime. Tucker makes a great point. Why is the ball going to Greg Ward? Right, and also they could have put Devontae in the slot. I mean, I understand that play. It's a really nice. I mean, it's almost like a get open for free kind of play. Like that play with the sprint right option with the. I mean, that play's been run. Bill Walsh has come up on the show like 5 times tonight. That's like a Bill Walsh staple back in the day. Like that's a very difficult play to defend. That guy usually gets open in the front corner of the end zone. But, I mean, Devontae could have lined up there. You don't have to put Greg Ward there. Put Greg Ward on the other side of the field and just use him as a decoy. I mean, I don't understand why he's getting the ball there. The other one, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, is why is the first read for Jalen Hurts on a 4th and 10 short of the sticks? I mean, that's what Sirianni told us, that the first read on that play is the crosser, it's Devontae, and he wanted the receivers to run better routes, which he kind of threw his receivers under the bus there, but whatever. Like, but why is that the first option? 4th and 10, and the idea is, all right, we're going short of the sticks and hoping Devontae Smith runs away from the corner. The more you boil down Sunday, it was a bizarre day for Nick Sirianni. Like, he gets off the hook because he didn't throw the interceptions, he didn't fumble the ball. They did run it enough to where you can't scream and yell they didn't run it at all. But there were some bizarre things he did on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, the issues they had and the fact that they're still in the game kind of points to just what a terrible team the Giants are.
Yeah.
Like we talk about the Jets being an easy win. Giants aren't that much better, especially when they're missing guys like Kadarius Toney and Sterling Shepard. I mean, Saquon Barkley. I said on Sunday, every time they gave the ball to Saquon Barkley, that's a win for the Eagles defense. I mean, the guy had a 32-yard run and finished with 41 yards. On like 13 carries? He's atrocious.
He's done that twice this year. He did it one of the Washington games because I think I had a prop on him or something. I took the under that game, and it was like 44 yards, and I saw a 30-yard run. I was like, oh, I lost. And then I won.
I mean, does he look explosive?
No, he looks – he lumbers.
He looks cooked. He looks like a guy who's 10 years older than he actually is.
Yeah, well, you remember when he first came in the league, and it was like, look how – athletic he looks. His legs are like tree trunks. Now he lumbers. He doesn't.
And like he was shifty for a guy that big.
Sure.
And now he's a guy that's that big, but he doesn't move like he used to. Like
no.
he just has no explosiveness left.
Yeah, he's not a very good football player right now. 215-592-9494. I will come back and let's talk about what the Phillies did today. Look, I like the move, but I also think that they missed the boat in the way they just spent their money on a relief pitcher because they had another one that would have been a better bargain. And they knew what he could do and he could stay durable. I'll explain next. Phillies made a move. Finally, I can't say John Middleton is completely sleeping through this. Dabrowski's completely sleeping through this. They made a move. We are about 2.5 hours from baseball locking out. We'll see if they make any more moves before the night is over. Some more big names, including Chris Bryant, might fly off the board. But the Phillies have landed a relief pitcher. Is he their next closer? We'll hit on that on Sports Radio 94. WIP and basketball fans celebrate the NBA 75th anniversary season on FanDuel Sportsbook in partnership with Valley Forge Casino. Right now, new customers can place their first bet risk-free. And if you don't win, you get up to $1,000 back. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, now is the perfect time to give it a shot. Look, there's player point totals, rebounds, assists. You put the money line over under. It's all there. And it's why I bet on FanDuel. I love the NBA on FanDuel. It's easy to use, easy to register, easy to deposit, easy to find your bet. And they're now accepting Venmo, which is perfect. And they have fast withdrawals. When you win, FanDuel pays you your winnings in as little as 2 hours. and the odds boosted specials are there every day and some big super boost each weekend. FanDuel Sportsbook is the official partner of 94WIP. There's no better place to bet on the NBA than FanDuel. So see for yourself why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up using promo code Jillio to get your first bet risk-free up to $1,000 and make every moment more of this NBA season. That's promo code G-I-G-L-I-O.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley behind the glass. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. Do we need some sort of hot stove alarm? Do we need to sound the bells here? The Phillies made a move. Do we get white smoke? Like when they
get a new pope?
I was going to say, do they elect popes? It's an election?
I don't know. I thought they'd just talk about it for a while.
Yeah, but that's
I guess they vote. The Cardinals? Is that what they are?
The Cardinals, yeah. All the Arizona Cardinals get together.
The St. Louis Cardinals?
Every Cardinal in any sport, they come together and they
Paul
pick
Goldschmidt, Kyler Murray.
Yes, Paul Goldschmidt, Kyler Murray, Zach Ertz now is part of this. They get to pick the next pope. I don't know what it's called, but the bottom line is we need something because the Phillies actually, you know, heading into this morning, this note by Matt Gelb was this. I woke up to this morning. I was like, oh, this is unbelievable. So before today, because the Phillies did make a move today, and we'll get into it here, the player they got. And look, I like him, and I think it's going to help their bullpen. I also think the money they spent, they probably could have spent it a little bit more efficiently. So Matt Gelb this morning at 8:40, he tweeted this out. As of now, and this has changed, the Phillies are one of eight teams yet to spend $1 in Major League free agency. The others, the Diamondbacks, Reds, Guardians. That's going to take me a while to get used to. That's the former Cleveland Indians, now the Guardians. Royals, Twins, but there's an asterisk on the Twins because they gave Byron Buxton a $100 million extension. A's and Padres. So the only real surprise there is the Padres because they've been a pretty big spender recent years. But, like, is anyone surprised? Diamondbacks, Reds, Guardians, Royals, A's, who are just tearing the whole thing down. They didn't spend a dime. And then there's the Phillies. So, like, before the today, nothing as the sport is about to shut down. They did make a move, though. Corey Knebel is coming to Philadelphia, 1 year, $10 million deal. He instantly becomes the reliever they have now with the best stuff. At one point early in his career, he looked like he was going to be a star. He was an all-star. He got hurt. He missed a lot of time. The Dodgers, as you'd expect, thought he could be good again, and they traded for him, and they got some really good production out of him. In September this year, he was pretty amazing. He actually started Game 5 for them of their division series against the Giants and was the opener in that game. So, I mean, I like him. And if he's healthy, I think he'll be good for the Phillies. I think he's, you know, he's really good. And he's been good throughout his career as long as he's been healthy. That is the hiccup, though, Tucker. He doesn't stay healthy. And it's why when I saw the contract, 1 year, $10 million, my first thought was like, they let Hector Neris go. He got 2 years, $17 million. Hector's just more, I mean, Hector's not as good as this guy, but Hector also pitches. He takes the ball whenever they want, as many days in a row as they want. I can't think of a Hector Neris extended injury list stint. I mean, he just pitched. Meanwhile, this guy's always on the injury list. I like Corey Knebel. I think he'll be a good pitcher if he's healthy, but I think it's a little risky, their first signing of the offseason. 1 year, $10 million for a guy that's pitched. I mean, how many innings has this guy pitched in the last 3 years?
39.
In 3 years. Meanwhile, Hector Neris has had to rack up, 150 in the last 3 years. Like, he pitches.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Knebel's career, I think he's pitched over 55 innings once in his career. Look at Neris' career. He's done it every single year, save for the pandemic year a year ago. Like, I understand Knebel's probably a better reliever, but it kind of flies in the face of everything this franchise has done in the last decade, which maybe they are trying to just go a different route. But think about a lot of the high-priced free agent relievers that they've signed, guys like Mike Adams, who was never hurt when he was with the Rangers, got hurt immediately. David Robertson, who was never hurt when he was with the Yankees, got hurt immediately. Tommy Hunter, who was a model of consistency and a model of health, even though he didn't look like it throughout his career. He got hurt immediately. Pat Neshek, who played and pitched a lot for about 15 years, he got hurt immediately. Maybe they decided we're going to go out and get the hurt guys and hope that it switches around.
Yeah, look, I think he has a chance to be quite impactful here as a guy that could get a lot of strikeouts, and he's got some nasty stuff, and he pitched in big games for the Dodgers, so I think he checks a lot of boxes. I always wonder with the Phillies. Like, I don't care how much money they spend. I think John Middleton, for the most part, has been a fraud as an owner, and he sold us that all he cares about is winning, and all he wants to do is win. And then when push comes to shove, he won't go over the tax, and they need to have a good enough team here to add to what they have. But look, if money's no object, they could pay Corey Knebel whatever he wants. I don't care. But if they're going to stay under the luxury tax, I think they entered today $38 million under the luxury tax threshold for this coming season. Now, it might go up because the CBA is continuing to unfold. That my take on why the Phillies have been relatively quiet is they want to know what the luxury tax is first. You know, last year, John Middleton said out loud when he was asked about the budget, about re-signing Real Muto. Remember that after the season last year? He said, well, how many fans are we going to be allowed to have? When is the mayor going to tell us the restrictions on attendance? He wanted to know how much money he was going to make before he decided how much money he was going to spend. That's who John Middleton is. So I'm not surprised that they've been kind of quiet here outside of one relief pitcher. They want to know what the luxury tax is.
I mean, John Middleton's a business guy. As much as he pretends that he wants to win baseball games and he wants his damn trophy back, I mean, that's not true. That's just a statement to get people into the ballpark and get people buying jerseys and talking about your team. I mean, everything that he has done, every move that he has made since becoming the majority owner of the team has been financially driven. Right, like even the Bryce Harper signing. I know he gave Bryce Harper $300 million, but Bryce Harper right now is the 18th highest paid player per average annual value.
And they elongated that contract, which I mean was obviously a bad idea for the long term, right? Like the last 3 years of Bryce Harper's deal will be terrible because he'll be old, and they did it to lower the luxury tax.
But guess what? They sold out a bunch of season tickets that year.
Right.
They're going to sell a million Bryce Harper jerseys every year for the next decade. I mean, they're going to clean up on it. Like, the idea of they're going to profit on a $330 million contract is pretty much true. Like, that's what's going to happen.
Sure
it was an investment.
Yeah, and it was a good one for them. But you're right. He's a businessman, and this is what they do. I look at the Phillies, and I say to them, here's what I wish. As much as I think the guy's a little bit of a lunatic, like Steve Cohen, did you see the quote today from Max Scherzer? Max Scherzer said when he met with Steve Cohen, because they had a Zoom a couple days ago before he signed, he told him, all I want to do is win. I'll do anything to win. I'm paraphrasing it, but that was part of their conversation. Now, he gave the guy $43 million a year. I think that's probably why Max Scherzer signed there, not because of whatever the heck Steve Cohen said on a Zoom. But I wish I felt that way about John Middleton, that he would do whatever it takes to win. I don't. And if he did, I think we'd have more action, and this team would be, like, let me give an example. Carlos Correa is and Trevor Story are probably the two big free agents, premium players at premium positions that are unsigned, right? Yeah, Trisimian signed and Seager signed. I mean, Freddie Freeman signed, but I can't imagine the Phillies diving down that path. I can't see it. But you know what John Middleton could do to show me he really wants to win? Go get Corey Seager or go get Trevor Story. Go get Correa or Story. Play Correa at third base. He's going to move there anyway. He's like 6 foot five. He's not going to play shortstop forever. But they won't do that. I mean, they have Knebel now, and I think it's a good addition. The one thing that is interesting about his addition here, I was reading Todd Zielecki's piece on this, MLB.com, tonight. It sounds like Corey Knebel might be the Phillies' closer. And that changes the way I feel about it. Like, if you're telling me he's coming here to kind of take over Hector Neris' role and be a setup guy, seventh inning, eighth inning, you know, whatever part of the game that Girardi wants to use him, sixth, depending on the night and the situation, I think that'd be great. I think he's probably would be one of the better setup men in baseball. Like, he was one of the, like, the Dodgers have, like, five closers. But that doesn't seem like what he's going to be. So, Dombrowski was quoted tonight as the Phillies announced this officially. We think he could close games, Phillies Dave Dombrowski. I think that's why he signed here. We did not promise him that. We just told him that he'd be a back-end person for us. But we think he has the stuff, and he's healthy. And when he has been that, he has the stuff to do it. We told him we think he could do it. We signed him with that thought process of being the closer, but we did not promise that to him. Sounds like he's the closer?
He's only been the closer once in his career. Yes. Like his best season in Milwaukee, his only All-Star season. That's the only time he's been a closer.
2017.
And the idea, it's just, it fascinates me because the movement in the bullpen right now, the only two moves we made is Hector Neris is out and Corey Knebel is in. And Hector Neris, I think, was maybe your most valuable reliever down the stretch once he moved Ranger Suarez to the rotation as a guy who could come in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning, get multiple innings, get guys out, kind of hand the ball over to whoever the closer of the night was. And who fills that role now? Like, is it going to be Connor Brogdon? Is that the next guy?
It might be, and he certainly has that, you know, you kind of stuff you think he might take a leap. Look, I think bottom line is the bullpen got better today than it was yesterday, so good on the Phillies. It's not a long-term deal. It's 1 year, $10 million. I think overall, I like him, and I like the move, and he threw harder last year than he has in years, and if he stays healthy, he'll be good. But there's risk here on the injury front. There's risk that, you know, it's just like Hector was more durable, and they let Hector go for less money per year. And let's not pretend the reality is, like, Knebel knows if he has a big year this year and he stays healthy, he can go back to free agency. So the Phillies trying to fix this bullpen is always a year-to-year thing. It never seems to work out. But it's not like they signed this guy for 2 or 3 years. You're like, all right, he's locked in here for a while. He's a one-year deal, and he'll be back out next year after the season. So that's the Phillies' move. As far as the rest of what's going on, it certainly feels like we are hours away. I know Jody was doing a countdown last night. Did Jody continue his countdown to the lockout?
No, I told him.
Okay.
He corrected himself.
So when I heard Jody, and I anyone can make the mistake he made, because December 1st is when it expires. So I think he thought like midnight, on November 30th, it would expire.
Singling out Jody Mack, because Tom Kelly did the same thing the night before.
I think it's a very easy thing to do, actually. I mean, like, if I say to you the CBA expires on December 1st, what do you think? You think, like, when it hits December 1st, it's over. I mean,
but it doesn't. It's December 2nd. Like, today's the last day to do business.
Right. Up until midnight tonight, and then it's over, and then they're going to get locked out. It sounds like, I was reading some of the stories today and some of the reports, it sounds like the union and the players met today for, I mean, hysterically, like, ridiculous brief amount of times. Like, imagine if you have a big, important thing going on, like, you know, a sport hinging on a collective bargaining agreement. And these sides are having 20-minute, half-hour meetings and calling it a day. Yeah, we're done now. So I think there's almost no chance there's not a lockout starting at midnight. Whenever this thing picks back up, and my guess would be sometime around the beginning of February. I'd love to be wrong and they figure this out in a week, but I doubt it. The Phillies have a lot of work to do. I mean, all they've done is add one reliever, subtract one reliever. So center field still needs to be fixed. Left field still needs to be fixed. And they still need to add, I would say, two or three more relief pitchers, unless they're going to try to pretend that Sir Anthony Dominguez is going to be a key cog in this. So they've got a lot of work to do when they get back.
And you didn't even mention a shortstop or third base or possibly second base. We figured out what's going on with Gene Segura.
No, I didn't. Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't wait to see which team they try to pawn off Didi Gregorius on. When I looked at their, because you could look at and their luxury tax and how much money they have to spend. And I mentioned before tonight, they had $38 million under the last system, right? The CBA we're dealing with now, $208 million for the luxury tax. Didi takes up 14 of the 38 they have to, like, imagine if they had 52 to spend instead of 38. It just would feel so much different about what they could get, who they might get, and it's an albatross of a deal for this coming season. $14 million for Didi Gregorius. All right, so Corey Knebel is in, one move down, and we'll see if they do anything between now and midnight tonight when the lockout looms. Now, there's one thing we haven't hit on tonight that I wanted to play. So this was from, is it called Man in the Arena? Man in the Arena, the Tom Brady, the ESPN Plus series? Is that what they're calling it? Is it a documentary?
Yeah, it's like a 10-part documentary, I think.
It goes through
like the middle of January. It's insane.
Tom Brady's a real documentary guy. First, it was the Facebook thing. That's where he first had his documentary. And now Man in the Arena, chronicling his career and his Super Bowl triumphs and all that with the Patriots and obviously the Bucks last year. But this one was interesting. A clip of Teddy Bruschi, Tom Brady, after Super Bowl 39, talking about the Eagles and just kind of the late game clock management and, I mean, lack of urgency from the Eagles offense that night as they tried to come back. Here's a clip from a Man in the Arena.
The clock playing a big, big part of this game. Now shows 5:26.
There were some strange, series in that game where we were wondering what was going on. Donovan McNabb, good player, but at times I was thinking to myself, what are they doing back there? I think we were up by 10. I literally in front of that huddle and I'm thinking, guys, I think they should be hurrying up here, but they're not. So when they come out, let's just play. And I call a defense, boom, and we go.
Time's a-wasting. Under 4 minutes left.
I think they're being a little too casual with the time and a little too cavalier.
We didn't know why they weren't rushing to the line of scrimmage and so forth.
So it's a race against the clock.
They ended up scoring on a touchdown pass to Greg Lewis. They hit a post. Donovan made a good throw to get within three.
Philadelphia's not finished yet. Patriots take over. They lead by three with a minute 47 remaining. If the Eagles can pull this thing off, it would be one of the greatest finishes.
We ran three plays and ended up having to punt. At that point, they had really no opportunity to do much. Had they recognized the situation differently or they felt more confident in a different style or approach, they would have done that. I believe that our situational football has always helped us over the years, and we've taught it and coached it and then executed it. And we have a lot of smart players that recognize the situations that we're in and then try to play to them.
So a couple things stood out as I heard that. One, I thought it was, no one will consider this a slight, but I thought it was interesting that Teddy Bruschi called Donovan a good player. He didn't say very good. He didn't say great. They're contemporaries. They came in the league around the same time. They were both good players. Diana Donovan was a good player. That was a little knock.
Yeah, it was kind of weird because the episode before they talk about their Super Bowl against the Panthers.
Yeah.
And for like 20 minutes, Brady and Vrabel and Bruschi talk about how tough that team was to play, how physical they were, what a good team it was, how it was the best team they played all year. Against the Eagles, they really just weren't that complimentary. They're like, oh, they had T.O. playing on one leg. That was impressive. But yeah, that's about it.
Interesting. And so then the other part of it, and they're shocked. But you could hear it in Teddy Bruschi's voice. Like, they're not moving.
You almost wonder if, like, he said something to McNabb or, John Runyon or someone. Like, hey, shouldn't you guys speed up a little bit here?
I haven't rewatched that game or that sequence in a while. I mean, it used to play often, and NFL Network would have that game on and whatnot. It is striking when you think back to it, like how much time they had. The situation was evident. They need to score twice. They need to score and get the ball back, whether it be an onside kick or just a stop, and a punt. And Cavalier is the white. Was that Mike or?
Mike Quick referred to as them being Cavalier.
He was
with the
right.
Clock.
It was like, I understand you have to score the first time before you score the second time. You can't rush it and just waste. You know,
you're in the Super Bowl. Like the margin for error is razor thin.
Well, and the other thing I thought about as they said that, you know, when Brady was talking about situational football and how they preach it, think about how many of the Patriots Super Bowls were won simply by they didn't make any mistakes and the other team made critical mental errors. I mean, it was, in essence, it was all of them, right? Like, you know, the Panther one, John Casey, the kicker, kicked the ball out of bounds. That set up Brady's field goal drive to beat the Panthers. The Eagles won, whatever the hell that was, that everyone in this city lived through, and then we kind of brought back there, the clock management. And then you go to, I mean, the one against the Falcons, where Matt Ryan, and they throw the ball instead of run the ball, and they're, I mean, that whole sequence with Kyle Shanahan. And then you go to the Seahawks one, where they have the interception in the end zone with Malcolm Butler. Like, four of their Super Bowls are won simply because the other team just lost their brain in the biggest moments.
Yeah, earlier in that same episode, when they're discussing Super Bowl 39, Brady says the exact same thing. He says, I think my job as a quarterback is to just not lose the game because I touch the ball so much. He's like, maybe I'll have an opportunity to win it, but as long as I don't lose the game, we'll be okay. And that's exactly what happened in pretty much every Super Bowl victory.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. And you know what? You got to give the Eagles credit for the one they beat him in a few years ago, because that they played, other than the Alshon, when Foles tried to hook up with Alshon and it bounced off his hands for an interception, the Eagles played a clean game. They played a very clean game. Meanwhile, the Patriots had a couple big issues. I mean, most especially the Brady fumble late in the game when Brandon Graham had the strip sack. I mean, it's just funny. Like, the only time you could beat Tom Brady in Super Bowl is when you don't make any mistakes. That's
no, and the Patriots are notorious slow starters in the Super Bowl.
Always.
And you think back to the Eagles one, they missed the field goal.
Right.
They missed the extra point after their first touchdown. They went for it on like fourth and one from the, you know, 12, 15-yard line, and Rodney McLeod had a great tackle on Brandon Cooks.
Yep.
They went for it on fourth down again around midfield, and they threw a deep ball to Gronkowski that was broken up. I mean, they gave the Eagles tons of chances early in that game. And then in the third quarter, they became the Patriots and came back and tied it and took the lead.
Yeah, well, I mean, when the third quarter started, it was almost like they woke up and realized, like, oh, they can't cover Gronkowski. I mean, that whole quarter was just like, Gronk, 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 Gronk. It was remarkable. It was over and over and over again, the plays he made. But, all right, you know what? I might watch this show now. I haven't watched any of it. So how many episodes have there been?
So there are three episodes. The third episode came out yesterday or today. So there are three episodes. The first one, I think, is the best, because it does talk about Brady's upbringing, his time at Michigan, and kind of goes through the whole Drew Bledsoe situation, which I was super young. Like, I think I was in kindergarten when that happened. So, like, I grew up just knowing, like, Tom Brady's the quarterback of the Patriots. I didn't know any different. So that was interesting. The second one talks about Lawyer Malloy.
The safety.
Who they cut when they got Rodney Henderson, yep. And he went to Buffalo. It's fascinating. I wish there was more Belichick in it, because he isn't one of the guys that speaks. It's usually Brady, Vrabel, Brewski. They have a few other guys. Lauren Maloney was one of the players earlier. Bledsoe is a big part of the Bledsoe episode. But it is kind of obvious. Like, the Bill Belichick, it kind of hangs over the whole thing. Like, his absence is very noticeable.
Yeah, so I remember I was watching the game live, the Jets and Patriots, that game where Mo Lewis knocked out. I remember watching it. I was like, I guess I was 15 years old. I remember watching, and he knocked him out by the sideline, and he had a chest injury. And then Brady came in, and, like, I mean, who had any thought what was going to happen? But, I mean, that was a big, like, I didn't watch the episode you're talking about with Bledsoe, but I saw some clips or some still photos. He just looked like he was glaring at Brady in a lot of them. Like, he must have felt so upset and jealous. Like, he was their number one pick. Like, he was he took him to a Super Bowl. Like,
and they signed him to a huge contract the same year they drafted Brady. And I think in the first episode, they asked Bledsoe, like, hey, what was your first impression when Brady came to training camp? You know, what did you think when he met him? He's like, he's a skinny little twerp from Michigan who's going to be my backup. I never for one second thought he was going to be the starting quarterback. And Brady said the same thing. He said, like, I thought at some point I'd be a starting quarterback in the NFL, but the Patriots drew Bledsoe's team. To think that I could take over seemed really far-fetched. And even after what Drew Bledsoe did in the AFC Championship game that year, where he came back after Brady got hurt and
right.
Won the game, and then Bill Belichick turned the reins back over to Brady the week before the Super Bowl. It's fat. Like, the way Bill Belichick was able to navigate that whole thing might be his greatest masterstroke. Like, yeah, he's done a million fantastic things. Remember the one year he became offensive coordinator, like, midway through the year just because he could? Drafting Mac Jones this year and building this team out. Being able to navigate something like that, which we had a similar situation here, and pretty much setting yourself up for 20 years of continuous success is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's usually much messier than it was. They won a Super Bowl and never stopped winning. So I'm going to watch that, the Man in the Arena, the Tom Brady documentary. Rob Cherry is in. Who's going to be with you from 10 at 2? What's up, Rob?
I'm not going to watch it.
No?
Nah.
Yeah, I'm interested.
I've seen it.
Well, yeah, we've played it out for 20 years.
The only part I want to watch is when he gets upset and doesn't shake Nick Foles' hand.
Well, I don't know if you heard. We just played Tucker played the clip. It was Brewski and Brady talking about how long the Eagles took in Super Bowl 39 in the fourth quarter to move down the field.
Right, the whole Donovan was throwing up.
And Brewski was basically like flabbergasted, like they're not moving. It's like the Patriots couldn't believe at how slow the Eagles were moving.
Belichick kept saying, "Are we ahead?" I remember that part. It's like, "Are we up? Are we still up?"
It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, that was that was Andy Reid, Donovan, the whole thing. The thing is, it wouldn't have been so bad if they hadn't covered it up. If they had actually admitted what happened, we would accept it. We wouldn't be happy, but we would accept it. The fact that they covered it up and still covered it up to this day enrages me still.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah. Rob, you know what else is bad? That game on Sunday was horrendous.
You know, they ruined our week and may have ruined our year with that game. I wanted to believe so bad. I figured, maybe they could win 4 out of 6 or 5, even 6 out of 6. And even overtake the Cowboys. Now it's like, I don't even know if they're going to make the playoffs.
Well, that hurts. They either have to win out or they need some help. I mean, they're going to win Sunday, and they'll get to 6-7.
I'm not so sure.
Oh, the Jets are awful.
Well, they've never lost to the Jets.
That's got
to
continue.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool little nugget. They've never lost.
Well, they've played them, 10 times, 11 times?
11, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like they – I mean, they've lost them in the preseason, but obviously that doesn't count.
Those don't count. Rob, I don't know what they do. I imagine they're going to keep playing Jalen Reagor, but those two drops. And Hurts was bad. I mean, Hurts was the biggest reason they lost. Yeah. But he put the ball in the guy's hands twice.
By the goal line.
To win the game.
By the goal line. It was like, that's embarrassing for a guy to be a first-round pick and to be so blatantly bad. I mean, he does nothing on punt and kick return.
He does nothing well. Nothing.
I mean, I don't even notice him half the time. I didn't even know Greg Ward was still on the team. It's like, I don't know where these guys come from. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside appears out of nowhere after every game he goes off on special teams and hurts his leg or pulls a hamstring. He makes a catch 2 weeks ago, and then he disappears. Ward all of a sudden appears, makes a catch. He's gone.
They show up to drop passes like a nightmare. They get on the field to drop passes.
It's like the Phillies in the bullpen. It's the Eagles and wide receivers. They can't find a bullpen, and the Eagles can't get a wide receiver.
Oh, boy.
Except they did find one. Devontae Smith.
He could play, yeah.
Yeah, except they didn't use him.
Well, you're right.
Would have been nice if they'd actually thrown the ball a few times.
Yeah, he was really really quiet on Sunday. They didn't get him the ball. And he was upset at the end. He chucked his helmet after the last play. Well,
the two catches for their best receiver?
It's not good enough.
Was he being triple teamed or something?
I mean, the Giants do have one good corner, but you're right. It's not good enough. Rob, the other thing, I'm sure you're excited. The Phillies signed a relief pitcher tonight.
Yeah, well.
Corey Knebel.
Unlike you, I'm glad to see Hector go. Hector is closer every year. He's not the closer.
No, he's not. But he was not a bad relief pitcher. He was durable. He pitched. He never got hurt.
He doesn't pitch that much. I mean, it's not like he pitches. He doesn't pitch more than 3 days in a row.
No, but he pitched 50, 60 games a year.
Yeah, well.
I mean, this guy, you know how many innings this guy's pitched, the new guy?
Not a lot. He's been hurt.
In the last 3 years, pitched 39 innings.
But he does have good credentials.
No, he's good.
When he does pitch, he's good.
Yeah, I think they got a good pitcher. I'm just a little worried about his injury history. I mean, Rob, they need more than this.
They screw the bullpen up every year. Year after year, they screw the bullpen. This is why every year they have to redo the bullpen.
And they're going to have to – they have a lot more work to do. And we have a lockout coming in 2 hours.
So the you can't sign anybody from the lockout till whenever they decide to lock people back in.
This could be a couple months.
Yeah. So we may not start on time.
Probably – you know what? I think they will. I think they'll – and, I mean, they don't want to miss games. Or the owners are in charge of this.
Well, they already missed games last year and the year before.
Yeah, so they'll open the doors back up when it's time to play baseball.
And the owners always lose. They always lose.
Yeah.
They think they have they're going to fold this time. No, they never fold.
Well, it's the best union in sports.
Exactly.
The MLB Players Union. All right, Rob Cherry up next. You guys have a good night on Sports Radio 94 WIP. Hey, it's Joe Giglio. Football is finally back. Your picks could be worth $10,000 with the Rocket Mortgage 2021 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up today by texting picks to 20357 and just pick the winner of each week's games. No point spreads, no lineups. and totally free to enter. Pick the most games right throughout the season, and you could win $10,000. Sign up now by texting PICKS to 20357. That's PICKS to 20357. $1,000 up for grabs each week, and $10,000 at the end of the season. It's the Rocket Mortgage 2021 Pro Football Pick'em.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.